Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 25 of the Two Quarterback Experience. This is the Russell Wilson Experience. We were trying to decide on which quarterback we were going to use, and it ended up being a tie, so we went with Russell Wilson. On the line with me, Joshua Lake, at Lake2QBs on Twitter. My name is Greg Smith, at GregSus on Twitter. I always forget to introduce myself these days. I don't know why that is. I guess I'm just a slave to the show notes. But what's up, Josh?
Hey, I see what you did there with the tie. That was nice.
Oh, yeah, I had to slip one little dig in there. That game was ridiculous, wasn't it?
Yeah, did you, you being on the West Coast, you may have stayed up. I didn't stay up till the bitter end, so I caught the recap this morning, and it looked ridiculous.
I watched the entire game, and it was mind-blowing. Like, everything that happened in that overtime period, like the two missed field goals, like when Hauschka missed, I was blown away. Like, I'll never forget that game, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's what you want out of a primetime game. It's something that you'll remember.
Yeah, it's just like the result of it was so strange, you know? Like, how is... I mean, the ties are so weird, because they're not losses, but they're still so much worse than a win, you know? Like, you can't imagine that either team really wanted that to be the outcome of that game, right?
Right, yeah. I don't know how you enter the locker room. Like, you're not happy, you're not sad. It's just kind of a wasted week.
They had some post-game interviews. I can't remember who it was they were interviewing, but you could tell he was just deflated by the whole experience. He was just like, yeah, we, you know, worked our asses off for however many hours, and we have a tie to show for it. This is friggin' great. And like, thanks for nothing, NFL, or thanks for nothing. I mean, who do you blame it on? You can't blame it on anybody but yourself. So I think there's that, like, level of, you know, self-disappointment that was across the board from both teams. It was, like, tangible in those interviews.
Yeah. No, it's a strange game and not a result that I expected. And I know we're going to talk about Russell Wilson because he's the spotlight quarterback, so maybe we'll get to it. But it was not how I saw that game going.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that game going defense heavy, but I expected a lot more scoring than what we saw. But anyway, let's start with a bit of very hot news, and this is that Arian Foster has announced his retirement. I guess when your running back competition is rattling off 200 yards per week in the starting role, it's time to hang it up. And I'm joking, of course, but I don't mean to slight Arian Foster. He's had an awesome career, but the time for Jay Ajayi is now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, after two good weeks and there's not a lot of depth, not a lot of reliable depth at the position in Miami, it's all good news for him at this point.
Yeah, we were just chatting on Slack about how you, me, and Sal, I think, all drafted Ajayi in the Scott Fish Bowl, so props to us.
Saw it coming or something like that.
I wish I could say that. Like, I was on the Ajayi bandwagon until they signed Foster, and at that point I was like, oh god, no, this is the worst thing that they could have done.
Yeah, I mean, that looked bad, and it could have been bad. I mean, if Foster stayed healthy, who knows where we would be right now.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's a great what if for sure. I don't think there's any point in wasting time on that sort of discussion now, but I am very excited for Ajayi. As glad as I am to own him in the Scott Fish Bowl, I actually dropped him in a league like 2 weeks ago when Foster was supposedly just about to come back before the first 200-yard game for Ajayi. So, you know, clearly you can't win them all. I remain to be an idiot.
Right. Well, that before the first game, I told you I would probably bench Ajayi because Foster being active looked like a bad sign, and then he ran for 200. So. Yep. Cannot get them all right is correct. And I would just say briefly, I'm sad to see Arian Foster go. I know Fantasy Douche just tweeted that for the last 6 years, Foster has been the top points per game running back in PPR leagues. He's missed a lot of games, but when he's playing, he's just outstanding. So it'll be sad to see him go, but I am glad I got to watch him play.
That's a cool stat. I mean, and I wouldn't necessarily have guessed that. I mean, it makes sense, but I mean, Jamaal Charles has been so good in that time frame too. Yeah, that's very impressive, and he will be missed. He was an awesome player and an awesome personality too. Like, a lot of his off the field, you know, candor was very much appreciated by me, I'll tell you that.
Right. That absolutely. And the vegan storyline got pushed out of hand. I wish people had focused on kind of the more interesting positions and real world impact he had.
Well, as a vegetarian myself, I can identify with his persecution, Josh.
There you go. The thing is, he went away from being a vegan. People just stuck with the narrative.
Yeah, that's just how it goes. That's Twitter for you. That's, you know, the media cycle for you. But right. What can you do? Kudos to Arian Foster on an awesome career. But let's dive into week 7. We got a lot to talk about here. And by and large, the big takeaway for me from week 7 was that the chalk plays ruled the day. Most of kind of what we expected to happen happened. We saw a lot of, you know, players in good matchups perform well. We saw a lot of players in bad matchups perform poorly. I'd say the biggest exception to that, or the most high profile exception to that, was Phil Rivers and Matt Ryan, kind of disappointing in their, you know, high over under match. I mean, there were still a ton of points scored in that game, though, right? They both finished inside the top 20, but they weren't the top five quarterbacks we expected them to be. And I think it's mostly because running backs were the people who were scoring when they got inside the goal line.
Right. I feel like several of the recent weeks have kind of emphasized just the touchdown scoring is out of whack in fantasy. And I don't know that it's worth changing, because I kind of like the, it's memorable. Just like the tie is memorable. It's memorable when you have that touchdown that pushes you over the edge, or the four touchdown game, or the Jerome Bettis three touchdowns on 4 yards,
oh,
or
yeah,
whatever it may be. You remember those, but it is crazy that a touchdown is worth 60 yards in most leagues. And so these quarterbacks can have good weeks, but when they have no touchdowns, it just, or few touchdowns, it doesn't look nearly as good.
And we could compensate for that with other positions a lot more easily than with quarterbacks. You know, you can do half point PPR, you can do a full point PPR to make wide receiver, like, non-scoring plays a little more worthy, you know. But with quarterbacks, what can you do? You can add points for completions, but based on the volume they get, like, the points you would add to that would be so minuscule, even still, compared to touchdowns, that I don't know if it makes a difference.
No, it's a good point, and I don't know that I would change it, but it really is just dramatic to me how much the touchdowns can shift your week from being really bad to really good. I mean, that's kind of what garbage time is for several quarterbacks.
Yeah, no doubt. With Rivers and Matt Ryan in particular, you don't have any, you know, concerns about these guys moving forward, do you?
No, I like both of them. I did coming into the season, and I still do. I think they're high-volume offenses. Rivers, primarily the volume is the big thing. For Ryan, it's having Julio Jones. And so I like both of them just fine. This isn't a concern to me.
Yeah, don't undersell those running backs in Atlanta either. Those guys have done a ton of work for Matt Ryan in the passing game as well as in the rushing game to kind of keep defenses honest. I think they're a big part of his success this year as well.
No, that's absolutely true. I was tongue-in-cheek to say it's just Julio, but anytime you can have a 50-point week from a wide receiver, that does good things for a quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I kind of touched on this, and I didn't plan on talking about it, but now that we're here, we might as well. What do you expect from Devonta Freeman now that Tevin Coleman is likely to be out next week, and does that affect how you would, you know, evaluate Matt Ryan?
It doesn't change Ryan much for me, because I think he'll still be fine. Freeman is still very active in the passing game. It's not as if they lost the third down back or something like that. But yeah, I think for Freeman, it's probably a good thing. We saw what he did last year when he was leaned on very heavily. And so because it looks like a short-term thing, I don't know that I'm worried about extra touches being leading to injury or anything like that, because right now the news I'm seeing isn't that Tevin Coleman is out too long.
Yeah, and if you want to maybe try to exploit the fact that Coleman's going to be back sooner rather than later, you might try to sell Devonta Freeman right now if you could get, you know, more than full value from him. Like, if you can get that, I don't know what the right word is, like David Johnson level payment for him in a trade, you know, someone paying for a high volume RB1, then maybe that's something you do this week and hope that, you know, people buy into the hype of Coleman missing one game when, or two games, you know, in the short term. I'm not sure if that adds up. People can probably read the Roto World blurbs themselves and figure out that Coleman will be back soon enough, but it's worth a shot if you're a Freeman owner, I think. What else have you been looking at, or what else kind of caught your eye in week 7, Josh?
Yeah, it was an interesting week. I had a good opportunity. I wasn't feeling too good, so I spent a lot of the day on the couch watching football. And one of the things that really stood out to me was that early London game and just how bad Eli Manning is this year. I know he's been bad in the box score, but just watching, it just doesn't look good. I mean, he does not look right. The offense isn't clicking like it should. And it's really been a disappointing season for someone that was kind of treated as a top 10, top 12 guy in most drafts.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of the year he had, what was it, 2013, 2014, where he was just awful, you know,
right.
Full stop. He was not good that year, and he bounced back the year after. He was fine the year before, but for whatever reason, that season, he just did not play well, and it feels like we're seeing that again. I don't really know how to explain it. Do you have any theories?
No, I don't know that I do. Well, I take that back. One thing that really stood out to me is they can't run the ball at all. I don't know how many times Rashad Jennings rushed for 1 yard. And I think the one-dimensional nature is letting defenses kind of prepare, and they cover better, they game plan better for the pass game because they don't have to expend a lot of effort for the running game. And I think Eli has always been prone to interceptions and poor throws. And when the defense can just key on him, it gets even worse.
Yeah, and we've heard some narratives pop up this year about how the Lions offense is better now that they don't have to force feed Calvin Johnson. And while I don't totally buy into that sort of narrative, you could drum up the same thing with Odell Beckham this season, right? If they're force feeding him targets, and meanwhile, he's not, you know, even Giants players' favorite guy on the team, if he's, you know, rubbing people the wrong way in his own locker room, but he's also the star of the team, I could see how that could, from a mental standpoint, take Eli, you know, out of his rhythm, out of his game, and kind of produce this sort of season. Now, I don't really know what to expect moving forward. Have you looked at their schedule past this week, Josh?
I have not recently. Let's see. I've got it pulled up right here. After this week, they're on bye, and then Philadelphia, Cincinnati, Chicago, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. So outside of Philadelphia, it's a pretty favorable stretch coming up.
Yeah, they generally have I'm looking at it too. They have a very good schedule for the balance of the week or the balance of the season, except for their two matchups at Philly. Now, one of those is in week 16, which is your fantasy Super Bowl. So if you're, you know, thinking about using Eli in that matchup, that's on the road against a very, very good defense, I might try to, you know, swing a trade, find somebody else, even somebody who might, you know, be regarded as a lesser quantity at the quarterback position. But with that said, it's hard not to try to ride that streak of good matchups in between the Philly games. I don't know. Like, I own him in a couple leagues, but I'll probably have to start him a lot of the time. I don't know about this week in Philly if that's something I'll be doing, but man, it's so hard when this happens to guys, like whether it's, you know, a small sample size or a matter of schedule, because his schedule to this point has been pretty tough, you know, at LA, against the Ravens, at Green Bay, at Minnesota. His first three games were fine, but the last four matchups have been relatively tough from a defensive standpoint. I could see him turning it around. I'm not all out on Eli, but I am worried.
Yeah, I actually, before this week, was debating in a league. Well, let me give you some context. Two quarterback league, I only am rostering three quarterbacks, and two are going to be on bye in week 9 at the same time. So I was looking ahead, thinking what I could do. And one possibility was moving Kirk Cousins for Eli Manning.
Mm.
Because one, Kirk Cousins has a much tougher schedule upcoming. Minnesota after their bye, then Arizona and Philadelphia later near the end of their fantasy regular season. Whereas we just talked about Eli having a favorable schedule, and Eli's bye would help me out versus the Cousins' bye. And at the end of the day, I just couldn't do it. Like, as much as I like the schedule, I haven't seen enough out of Eli that makes me think he can exploit a good matchup. I mean, they've been tough matchups he's faced, but these aren't elite defenses outside of Minnesota, and I'm just not sure that he can overcome whatever is going on, even in a good matchup.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll probably have to hold on to him in that one league, but I don't know. We'll see. Let's move on, though. Let's talk about Cody Kessler and the host of quarterbacks that the Browns have run out this year. Kessler went down in week 7. He is not necessarily looking good for week 8. And so at this point, we're looking at either Josh McCown returning for the Browns or Kevin Hogan, who replaced Kessler in week 7, stepping in and being the starter in week 8. Do you want any piece of either one of those guys? Are you going to be putting in some waiver claims for Hogan or McCown?
Just Kevin Hogan, depending on your scoring, is somewhere in the top half of fantasy quarterbacks, possibly even higher. And that's kind of amazing. But yeah, McCown is the one that interests me. I've been interested all year because he's proven that he can be a decent fantasy option kind of in the streaming category. Hogan, I think, is kind of a flash in the pan. It's not someone that I'd be spending a lot of money on, and I don't think he keeps the job. It's either Kessler or McCown within a week or two, if not this week. So McCown I would put some on if I'm in need of a quarterback, but you can't be too thrilled with the Cleveland quarterback, no matter who it is.
So you would prioritize McCown over Hogan in your waiver priority if you needed a QB?
I would, just because, like I said, I don't really think Hogan is much of anything. I think he kind of had one of those, I'll come in and run quite a bit because I didn't plan to start this week. I don't know that he would be very interesting going forward.
Yeah, I would have some concerns. Like, we'll get to this a little bit later, but week 8 is the first week where we have a lot of teams on bye. 6 teams are not going to be playing in week 8, and that could create a situation where you are very light on QB options. And if that's the case and you absolutely need to get a starter for the upcoming slate, I could see prioritizing Hogan higher if you believe that McCown is not going to be able to come back from his injury. It's not one of those things where McCown was just riding the bench and now they're going to decide between the two. You know, it's not like he was just inactive because they wanted him to be inactive. Like, he's coming off an injury, and I don't know, there is a non-zero chance that he's not healthy enough to play in week 8. And if that's the case, like, I could see putting Hogan higher. Like, he does have that rushing floor, which helps, but I don't know. It's kind of a murky situation that I'd want to avoid if I could. Like, maybe try to find Ryan Fitzpatrick on waivers after, you know, somebody dumped him for Geno. But it's tough. I don't feel good about either or. I would lean with you that I'd rather have McCown. I guess my concern is that I think there's a better chance that Hogan might actually be the starter in week 8.
Yeah, I think in the short term it's possible to be determined, obviously, but waivers may run before we know. Probably will run before we know. And so I can understand your point. It's a fine matchup. And as we're going to talk about later, with 6 byes, the streaming kind of bad quarterback options are really few and far between this week. So yeah, any starter is going to have value if you're kind of stuck in a bad situation. So I hear your point on that.
Yeah. Let's get away from quarterbacks for a second. Let's talk about a running back. Let's talk about Jerick McKinnon. He injured his ankle in week 7, and we're looking at Matt Asiata as the presumed starter if McKinnon can't go in week 8. And they play on Monday night, which doesn't help, you know, because those practice reports are going to be a day late. And if you want to play McKinnon, you're not necessarily going to know whether you can or not until Monday if he's a game time decision. So with that in mind, whether you're the McKinnon owner or not, how excited should you get about Matt Asiata? Is he a guy that you're looking at on waivers this week?
Probably looking at, yes, but not spending a lot of money on. They're playing on the road in Chicago, I believe, this week. Yeah,
that's
looks
right.
Correct.
Yep.
And Chicago hasn't been, they've been kind of a middle of the road rush defense. According to 4 for 4, they're kind of dead in the middle for average or adjusted fantasy points allowed to running backs. And so it's not an amazing matchup. And Asiata is kind of the plotter, the boring guy who, if he gets a lot of volume, maybe he's interesting, but he also doesn't have the upside that you may want, depending on what your situation looks like. So yeah, he's a guy that I would plug in to my waivers, but probably a 5 to 10% at most of my budget.
Yeah, my concern is just that offensive line is so roughed up that even if you get him, he is such a plotter that he might not be very good. The Monday night thing just kills it for me. I if I'm the McKinnon owner, I want Asiata, but if not, I'm like you. I'm not putting a whole lot of priority on him. Let's talk about Wentz and Bradford, who both looked really bad against each other's excellent defenses on Sunday. Do you have hope for these guys moving forward, or should we start to believe again that both these guys are mediocre to bad quarterbacks or bad fantasy options, I should say?
I'm a little torn on how to respond, especially for Wentz, because I am convinced that Minnesota is a good defense, and I do think this was a tough thing for a rookie quarterback to face such an elite defense. And I think he kind of is a good rookie, so maybe expectations got a little inflated after he started out so well. But I think he's going to be fine going forward. Bradford, I'm not sure. That offense is very confusing to me. Like you said, the line looks bad. And at wide receiver, it's been this weird, like, Cordero Patterson's getting screens. Diggs is sometimes open, sometimes not. I think he's interesting, but I don't know that I feel comfortable ever starting Bradford regardless of matchup, just because it is kind of an unknown commodity in Minnesota. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, I have a little bit more faith in Bradford just because he is that veteran. You know, he's been in the league long enough to at least be, you know, a Joe Flacco or Alex Smith type game manager. And his upcoming schedule for the rest of the season is not too tough. Probably his worst matchup is at home against Arizona in week 11, but it's pretty soft other than that. I guess week 16 at Green Bay isn't too appealing going on the road in the winter. But in general, I think if you're looking for a guy who can cover your bye weeks, Bradford's fine. I'm not excited to have him, but I'm not worried about him. based upon this one game. I do believe that the Philadelphia defense is excellent, not necessarily on the level of Minnesota, but I think they're a top 5 to top 10 defense pretty easily in my mind. So that was kind of what I expected. Wentz, on the other hand, I'm more pessimistic than you, I think. I believe the rookie blues are perhaps set to continue a little bit more. His schedule gets a little easier here with Dallas and New York on tap, but those are both games on the road, and that's where he's, aside from that game against Minnesota, his road games are where he's looked the worst. Home for Atlanta in Week 10 is appealing. On the road at Seattle in Week 11, no thank you. I have a feeling he's going to be up and down, and more down than up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think he'll be interesting. I do think he's shown something, but yeah, the matchups that he faced when he was doing really well were all very favorable. Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Detroit, defenses that we're seeing now not to be very good. But I do think he'll have some appeal. I think he remains in the QB2 conversation every week, though.
Yeah, I think that's fine. But I think that you could say that about most quarterbacks, don't you agree?
That's true. I guess there's only a couple that don't hit that level in my rankings most weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I had Russell Wilson outside of my top 20 last week, and that ended up being a good call. But I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I'm just trying to illustrate the point that there are a lot of usable quarterbacks every week, and it depends a lot on matchup and skill and health from them and their receivers and their offensive lines. Like, you know, all these different factors that come into play. But at the end of the day, when you're looking at the group as a whole, you can talk yourself into a lot of these guys.
Once you get down to that low tier, it's true. And especially matchups, I mean, look for who's playing Cleveland, who's playing Detroit. And if it's a bad quarterback, all of a sudden you think about starting him.
All right. So let's test this theory with our next note here. And that's Landry Jones of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Filled in pretty admirably for Ben Roethlisberger. He wasn't good, but, you know, he held the fort. He kept Bell and Brown fantasy relevant for the week. Are you interested in Landry Jones more now that you've seen him with a full game under his belt?
I'm not very interested, no. New England has not been they've not been very good against opposing quarterbacks this year. And now there's a bye, and I expect Ben will be back in the next week or two, is kind of the way I'm reading the tea leaves. And I don't think that he's very interesting against on the road at Baltimore after the bye. And so really to look at starting him, it'd be maybe Dallas in week 10 and 11 against Cleveland for sure. But I expect that Ben will be back by then. And so I don't know that I love holding an iffy quarterback through a bye week just to get a road game against Baltimore, who's been an okay defense.
Yeah, it's an interesting game to play because we don't know exactly when Roethlisberger is coming back. He's the type of dude who has beat injury timetables in the past. So if you told me that Landry Jones was going to start in week 9 after the bye, I wouldn't want to use him there. But like you said, week 10 at Dallas, if Roethlisberger's still not ready, maybe I'd use Jones there. And Cleveland is appealing, but I think by the time you get to week 11 against Cleveland, that's probably when you would expect Roethlisberger to be back almost no matter what. Yeah, I'm with you 100%. What else do you want to talk about from week 7, Josh?
Oh, I don't know that I'm emotionally prepared, but Geno Smith.
Ouch.
Just crushing. I mean, I have held Geno on so many dynasty rosters, perhaps all of them. And he got his chance. He looked like Geno, where it's not great, but there's fantasy points to be had. And then he tears his ACL. Just sad to see. I mean, he had finally gotten what looked to be a real starting job. I mean, Fitzpatrick was really underperforming. It could have been Geno's job going forward. We could have had him for the rest of the year. And he would have been a really interesting waiver pickup and was, but could have been someone that you rolled with for most of the season. And it's just gone. And we're back to Fitzpatrick and no one's excited about it. And they get Cleveland this week, so you almost have to play him.
Yeah, I mean, it had to have been a wake-up call for Fitzpatrick, and at the very least, it's a wake-up call for fantasy owners to say, hey, if Fitzpatrick did get dropped in your 2QB or Superflex league, you definitely want to go out and make a bid on him in waivers this week, just based strictly on that Cleveland matchup. I don't think that all of the struggles the Jets have had should fall directly on Fitzpatrick's shoulders, but yeah, I don't know. It is a bummer about Geno. I at the very least, you have to feel bad for that dude, because he had the shot. You're right. He was ready to come in and be the dude, and injuries, man. What can you say?
Yeah, it's brutal. And Brian Hoyer is another name that's been that way. There's been just a few injuries this year to very interesting, cheap quarterback options. And it's just meaning we really won't get to see what they're going to become. I mean, we could throw all of the Cleveland quarterbacks into that same discussion.
Absolutely. So, I mean, what do you think about Fitzpatrick going forward? Is he a guy you feel better about now that maybe he's had that, you know, kick in the pants? Do you think that's what he needed?
I mean, I think he needs to be a better quarterback, and that's not happening. But I he's the starter now. I mean, well, I guess that's probably speaking too strongly. They could go to Bryce Petty if they keep losing games just to see what they've got. I think that a game against Cleveland is going to be a very good thing for him. So he comes off a fine performance, looking better, goes to get Cleveland, and that may be the start of some good things. I don't think that he's going to be anywhere even close to what he was last year. But, yeah, I think he is in that same category of QB2, that QB2 conversation we were talking about earlier.
His schedule down the stretch is fantastic. After that Cleveland game, the only bad matchup he has is week 10 against Los Angeles, and that's at home. So you get the Rams traveling west to east. But other than that game, he has at Cleveland, at Miami, New England at home, Indy at home, at San Francisco, Miami at home, and at New England in the fantasy playoffs, or the fantasy Super Bowl, excuse me. So all of those are good matchups. All of those have been very favorable for quarterbacks. I think that you have to kind of forget about what happened with Fitzpatrick to this point in the season and start from ground zero at this point. Getting benched feels like a good reset button in my mind. Like there's a narrative there that I can buy into. You're right, though. He just hasn't been good. It's, man, I don't know what to do with him, man. It's so hard. Like, I think I want him, though. I think I want Fitzpatrick. And I might even be willing to trade for him based on the schedule alone.
I agree with you. The narrative is there that he could play better. He's really going to be hurt by the loss of Eric Decker. Like, Quincy Anunua has stepped up well, but Eric Decker is such a consistent, reliable force, no matter which offense he's in, especially when it comes to red zone opportunities. Having Decker and Brandon Marshall on the field at the same time in the red zone just led to good things. And I don't know that Anunua has quite the talent that Decker did in the red zone. And so I'm a little worried about, coming back to the yardage versus touchdowns discussion, will Fitzpatrick have enough passing touchdowns that he is a very interesting QB2?
Yeah, I kind of wish we'd see them use their two running backs a little bit more, maybe even at the same time, get Powell and Forte involved. But you know, that's just me playing armchair coach. So we'll move on. Let's talk about a guy who is only slightly injured from what we know, and that's Joe Flacco. He had a great matchup against the Jets, you know, a defense that had given up a lot of passing yards, a lot of passing touchdowns, and Flacco crapped the bed. He did basically nothing in that matchup. Can we make excuses, you know, about the injury, about his subpar receivers, about the coordinator change, or can we finally admit to ourselves that Flacco is just an average QB who, you know, isn't all that good in the first place?
Yeah, I'm done making excuses for Flacco this year. I mean, he's been bad all year, and kind of the unspoken, not so secret is that he hasn't been very good for most of his career.
Yep.
He's never been over 4,000 yards almost every season. Well, I shouldn't say that. Over the last 5 years, he's had most of his seasons where he has as many interceptions as touchdowns, or roughly similar. His accuracy in the last few years has been better, but prior to that, he'd been a sub 60% quarterback. He just has never been a great quarterback in good situations, and now the situation is not good, and he is playing down to the level of that offense, and I'm done making excuses for him.
Yep, average Joe. That's what I've been calling him for 3 years, and I will continue to call him that because that's what he is. Let's keep going. My final point here from week 7, we talked about how the chalk really played out. Andrew Luck, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, all still elite. You know, all these guys kind of turned in those performances where it was like, oh yeah, I don't know why we ever doubted these guys. Drew Brees on the road, Aaron Rodgers, you know, without Jordy Nelson really even doing that much, Andrew Luck, you know, missing a ton of receivers. Is there any one of these guys that jumps out to you as someone you want to discuss here?
I'm still worried about Rodgers. I mean, the fact that Devontae Adams was the leading target in that offense this week was a little bizarre, but I think there's still problems in Green Bay. I don't think Ty Montgomery is an answer at running back, and they're going to have to be gimmicky until they get someone reliable. And so I'm a little worried about him, but he does continue to produce, and he may not be elite every week, but he's still a top option. But I will say same as I've said before, if you can get someone that still sees him as elite, then I'd be looking to make that move, I think.
See, I disagree with you here, Josh. I think that I'm back in on Rodgers, and I saw somebody make this case on Twitter earlier, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was. I apologize to this person, but they were talking about how kind of the gimmick of Ty Montgomery might have been just what Rodgers needed, playing more, you know, spread out, playing with more legit receivers and not really worrying about who the running back was. The person who talked about it on Twitter mentioned, you know, kind of taking the New England Patriots approach to offense, which is just play your best guys and, you know, make it work. And I could see that happening going forward. Like, maybe Eddie Lacy was a drain on this offense. The fact that he's doing this stuff with Davante Adams is appealing to me. Like, I'm starting to buy into Davante Adams. Like, if he can do it with Jordy having a bad game, like, yes, those receivers have been a little inconsistent over, you know, the course of their careers, but I could see them getting hot, especially with a good quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, who knows how to put the ball where he needs to. Like, I'm on the other side of this one.
So I agree. Adams has been fantastic. He went from one of the worst receivers in the league last year to one of the most efficient this year. One problem is gimmicky will work against bad defenses like the Bears or probably like Atlanta and Indy these next 2 weeks. Gimmicky is going to really struggle with this second half schedule Green Bay has. They go on the road to Tennessee and Philadelphia, and they have home games against Houston, Seattle, and Minnesota.
That's a great point.
That's a lot of tough matchups for a gimmicky offense that's struggling. And I think several of those can really poke holes in this gimmicky, we'll put a wide receiver in the backfield, sort of just toss it out and see what works sort of thing. And so I'm worried that Rodgers will be who he's been so far this year, where he has elite weeks about half the time, and the others are just kind of so-so in the QB1, QB2 borderline.
Yeah, I could see it. I guess the question for me is whether what we're seeing is gimmicky or whether it's just him using his weapons properly. And if I had to guess, I would guess more on the gimmicky side. But I don't know. I trust Aaron Rodgers. He, despite his struggles this year, he's been a top 20 quarterback every week. And I buy into the fact that Davante Adams is finally starting to deliver on some of the hype that he had, you know, coming into this offense. The injury from last year that he supposedly had, I mean, it seems legit at this point that whatever was wrong with him last year is not wrong with him this year. I don't know. Like, you are right about the schedule. It's a great point. With that said, by the time they reach that portion of their schedule, Eddie Lacy, James Starks, one of them hopefully will be back and be able to diversify the offense to some extent. It's an interesting conundrum. Like, I don't know. I think you could see it go either way. And I would bank on the talent, especially in a year where we've seen, you know, so many quarterbacks go down. Like, I don't mind banking on Aaron Rodgers. With that said, maybe you just ride out the next two games against Atlanta and Indy and you try to trade him. That could be the right move. We'll see. Now let's move on. I just mentioned how Eddie Lacy is eventually going to return for Green Bay. Let's talk about someone returning for Andrew Luck, and that's Dante Moncrief. We've seen what Luck has done in recent weeks without him and without, you know, Dwayne Allen, without Philip Dorsett. Like, he's doing a lot with not very many receivers. What do you expect for Luck once Moncrief comes back?
I think this certainly helps. Dorsett has really not been impressive. Dwayne Allen's been lost. All those problems that you were mentioning. I think Moncrief is a very talented receiver, and having someone of high talent to play alongside T.Y. Hilton is probably a good thing for this offense. And yeah, I've been impressed with Luck already. He's at four straight 20-plus weeks now after kind of struggling to start the year. And so getting back a top wide receiver is likely a good thing.
Yeah, for me, the volume with Luck is what makes him good, and that I think I've been preaching that since the preseason. They're just going to pass it a ton. He's thrown for over 300 yards in, let's see, one, two, three, four of his six games, four of his seven games. So I don't see that going away. And if you add into the mix another good receiver, especially one with, you know, good red zone skills like Moncrief, I think that could really turn Luck into a quality asset down the stretch. But you have to look at the schedule and you have to look at the playoffs in particular and see some of the same concern that we have with Rodgers. He gets Houston in week 14 and he's at Minnesota in week 15. Are you maybe looking to try to get out from under Luck as well?
I'm not as worried. I think that for one, getting Moncrief back is going to improve an offense, whereas I don't know that getting back Lacy and Starks improves the offense as much as just changes the way they function. I mean, like you, to your point earlier, it wasn't as if the running game was going well with them in.
Sure.
And the volume and risk taking of Andrew Luck is, as you've said, it's one of his strong points, whereas Rodgers is sometimes too conservative and won't force the ball and doesn't have the same volume to support him when he's not as efficient as he's used to. So Luck I have a little more confidence in than I do Rodgers, even though both do have some tough matchups upcoming.
Yep, that's fair. You got anything else on week seven in hindsight before we move on to Russell Wilson?
I won't belabor it, but Blake Bortles is still very, very bad. And I know you and Brian discussed it last week on the pod, so I won't get into it, but I wasn't here and I hate Blake Bortles. And so it is, after all of the Jaguars Twitter hate I got all offseason, it's nice to see that he is still not a good quarterback.
Preach it, Reverend Lake. Preach it.
But anyway, no, I got nothing else. You want to talk about Russell Wilson?
Let's do it. He's the Spotlight QB. Let's do what we always do at the beginning of this segment and just talk about one thing we noticed from this week. What did you see on Wilson in week seven?
So I don't know whether to attribute it to an injury, but he's just not running at all. I mean, they still have some of the zone read looks, but he's not running. He's not keeping. He's not getting you anything on the ground. It's noticeable when you watch that offense. I mean, granted, against a very good defense, so I don't want to make too much of it, but he just wasn't looking to run. And I would say it's probably the injury, but his stats say he hasn't been looking to run most of the year.
You're absolutely right. A couple weeks ago, or maybe it was just last week, Sal from 2QBs put together some numbers on the percentage of fantasy points that quarterbacks score, via the pass and via the rush. And it was interesting to see that. And I asked him if he had the data for last year, because I wanted to compare Russell Wilson then to Russell Wilson now. He didn't have it, so I just looked it up myself. Come on, Sal, help me out, buddy.
Oh, trashing Sal.
Yeah,
Never a good move. He'll respond with a smile and some warm cookies, I
yeah,
think.
he's just not helping me be as lazy as I want to be, and that's the real issue here. So I expect better next time, Salvatore. Anyway, last year, approximately 18% of his fantasy points, Wilson's that is, came from rushing, not Sal's fantasy points. I think Sal gets like 70% of his points from the Konami code, but I digress. This year, Russell Wilson, compared to 18% last year, is only getting 4% of his fantasy points from rushing the ball. And God, that's such a significant drop off. And we saw it in that game, in a game where nothing was working with the pass, where the running game was largely getting stuffed. I would expect the Seahawks to call more designed runs, more action outside of the pocket for Russell Wilson, where maybe he could take off. And they just were not doing it. We started to see a little bit more in overtime, and maybe that's just because they were desperate. But I agree with you. I have a feeling that it probably has more to do with injury than anything else. Like, we know that Wilson wasn't 100%. What was that, 3 weeks ago when Trevon Boykin came in, and there were some questions about whether or not Boykin would start the following week. I don't think it's fair to necessarily expect regression to the mean here for Wilson's rushing prowess. Do you?
At this point, I don't see it. I mean, his first 2 weeks, where he's probably his most healthy, he had 16 and 14 rushing yards, and it's been single digits or negative the next 4 games. And so I don't know, regression to the mean or to the median, if we're just talking this season, is going to be like 8 yards, and he's going to have a real change in this offense. And we saw it last year that in the second half of the season, they really transformed the offense as far as its efficiency went, more than its run pass balance. But right now, what I'm seeing just says he is not looking to run this year for whatever reason. And so I don't think you could project it, although if you're owning him, I'd sure be hoping that changes.
Yeah, I mean, some of it could also be attributed to the issues that Seattle has on the offensive line. And Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth were talking at length about that during the broadcast. Do you think that's like an at-large problem for the Seahawks, or is it just something that was magnified because they were facing, a really good defense in Arizona on the road?
I think that's a good point, that you play a defense this good, and as the announcers were doing a good job of pointing out, they're one of the more unique. I mean, they have a lot of speed. They're playing former DBs at linebacker. They're a unique defense that's very talented. But I think it is certainly a concern with Seattle. I do think that the offensive line is a key part of what they do. That ground and pound game, giving Wilson kind of clear lanes to look at when he's throwing. And so it is a worry, but I don't know that we can attribute too much to it. It seems like the whole offense has really struggled.
Yeah, I totally agree. And my concern is that the offense is struggling because Wilson is not 100%. Another guy who clearly to me isn't 100% is Tyler Lockett. Now, we know he's hurt. We know he has a partially torn PCL or some part of his knee, I think. I can't remember. I should fact check these things before we do the podcast, but I don't know. I just don't think Wilson can get by throwing 40% plus of his targets to Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham. Like, defenses are going to be able to account for that, especially if the offensive line is bad and they're not getting enough out of the running game. Now, if you could fix one of those two things, if you could find a third receiver who is good or, you know, playing up to his ability, I don't mean to, you know, say that Tyler Lockett isn't good, but if he could play up to his talent level, or if the running game could get on track thanks to a better offensive line, that could remedy a lot of the issues we're seeing here. But it seems to be, you know, death by a thousand cuts here with the Seattle offense, where they have so many small problems that it's become a large problem for them altogether.
It's disappointing to see Wilson has just really been bad. I mean, just pulling up his raw numbers makes him look bad. Points per game, he's QB 28. I mean, he, to your point, the fact that you ranked him outside the top 20, even in one of the worst matchups, is really astounding. I mean, last year, second half of the season, we would have said, go ahead and roll him out there. He's a QB 1 no matter the matchup. And now we're talking about, is he a QB 2 in elite matchups?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, and we can move right into our QB finish game. Like, this is a guy who, or for the past 4 years, finished almost half of his game inside of the top 10 at quarterback. And this year, he only has one of those finishes. On the top 20 side, he was at almost 80%. And even there, he only has two top 20 games. It's been a really bad season. With that said, if you look at his schedule, you see some nice matchups. How many top 20 weeks and top 10 weeks do you foresee Wilson having going forward, Josh?
I do think the top 20 is going to improve. He's been, even though he's only had, I think you said two, he's been on the border. He's been QB 22 a couple of times, 24. He's not disastrous most weeks.
For where people drafted him, it's been disastrous.
Oh, agreed. Absolutely agreed. But as far as, is he going to have top 20 weeks? I think he's going to do it in a high percentage. So if he's played six, he's got 10 games left. I think he's probably going to be a top 20 option in 8 to 9. I'll say 8 of those games.
You're more optimistic than I am. I will give him 7 of the last 10 as top 20. I do agree that we should see him bounce back into that zone a little more readily. Again, the schedule going forward is a lot better. He has another game against Arizona. That one's at home, though, towards the end of the year, so he should be better then. He gets Philadelphia in week 11. Other than that, not a whole lot of terrible matchups. So some like borderline ones. But a couple really easy ones, too. So the easy ones, I would say, lead to where you're going to potentially get those top 10 weeks, you know, at New Orleans, against Buffalo, New England, and Tampa Bay. I'd give him 4 more top 10 games through the balance of the year, which even with, you know, 7 to 9 more top 20 weeks is not good value for where you drafted him. He's still going to be a disappointment at year's end.
No, I agree. I think I would say 5. Top 10s for the rest of the season. I guess one thing we should note is he plays San Francisco in the final week, and that's a good matchup. So it's not fantasy relevant, but I do think he'll be a good option then for anyone playing in week 17. Like you said, several of these matchups are so favorable that he's going to have those top 10 weeks, but you're absolutely right. It is very disappointing for the price that you paid to get Wilson.
So let's look a little bit ahead here. I want to look micro at this season first and then macro at next year. For this year, Wilson has definitely been his worst since his rookie year, and probably actually worse than that year too. Is this, you think, a good buy low opportunity for Wilson in season?
I think so, yes. I think his owners are probably so disappointed that you might be able to get him cheaper than even we're projecting him for, just because people are so burned and have seen so many times he's been outside the top 20 that you might. It is worth putting a feeler out and seeing just how down on him the owners are. But if you're having to pay those top QB1 prices, then I'm absolutely out.
Yeah, no, I agree. Now, let's think about how, even if he does bounce back through the second half of the year, what's that going to do to his draft stock next year? Like, we're still going to have all these terrible weeks from the beginning of the season piled into his cumulative stats. Are we going to get like a Matt Ryan-esque value on him in 2017? Do you think that's possible?
That would be really nice, but I kind of doubt it. I think that it would have to be a terribly disastrous end of season for us to see a big discount off of his price. I think he's still going to end up in Dynasty. I still think he's going to be a top four quarterback in the offseason and redraft next year. I would anticipate he's still going to be drafted as a top five, top six quarterback, kind of no matter what happens here, assuming health.
Yeah, I mean, fantasy owners are getting a lot smarter. Like, the fantasy industry at large is sniffing out these regression candidates a lot more readily. You know, like, we saw that with Mike Evans in this past preseason, where he had a pretty bad 2015 relative to expectations, but people still drafted him high this year because they knew he was an elite talent. They knew the opportunity was going to be there. And I think we'll probably see the same thing with Wilson. With that said, I think if you are a dynasty owner and you're looking to maybe acquire somebody who's below market value, now is a great time to get Wilson for that reason. You know, this is coming from a guy who doesn't play a whole lot of dynasty, but I'm with you. I think whether you're playing redraft or dynasty, now's a good time to throw out some feelers just to see where the owner's at. Do you have anything else on Wilson before we move on?
No, I don't think so. I think we've covered it well.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's look ahead to week 8, and we'll try to keep it brief because we're running a little long tonight. I mentioned this earlier. A lot of teams are on bye. LA, Miami, San Francisco, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and the Giants. I just kind of want to, you know, throw up the red flag here, wave it around a little bit, and let everybody know that now is a very good time to adjust your expectations of what a quality lineup looks like. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, not just at quarterback, but your roster is probably going to look bad these next couple of weeks.
Yeah, but and you can't let that scare you, because you have to understand that other owners' rosters are going to look bad too. And whether or not that happens in week 8 specifically doesn't matter, because if their roster is solid in week 8, that means those bye weeks for them are coming up somewhere else, and they're probably going to struggle in that time. So yes, you may have a better or worse matchup because of it on the upcoming slate, but that doesn't necessarily mean you need to, you know, despair and think, oh, woe is me, I need to trade my whole team away to fix this week, because, you know, after this week, you'll be right back to having those guys available to your lineups. You know what I keep saying, you know what I mean. It's one of those crutch words for me.
You know, it's a really good point. Just don't panic trade.
Yeah. But do you know what I mean, Josh?
I think I know what you mean.
Okay.
If you ask me again, I might figure it out.
Okay. what else are you looking for in week 8?
One of the things I really want to see is what Jay Cutler looks like coming back. And so Brian Hoyer broke his arm and is put on the injured reserve. Jay Cutler is magically healthy enough to play.
Surprise!
Now. Very coincidental timing. And so that's one place where I do want to see, is Cutler still bad? I mean, I said he was a bad pick before the season, and I'm selfishly glad he is going to play now, just so I can say he's a bad quarterback and I got the call right. Like, he plays one game and gets hurt. I can't take credit for that. That's fluky. That has nothing to do with analysis. I kind of want to see him come back in and struggle. Just, I still don't think he's very good, and I don't think that he's better than Brian Hoyer.
Just that schadenfreude with Jay Cutler on a very high level. I mean, do you think he's got to be a little pissed off that he didn't come in for Hoyer in that game, right? Like, they threw Matt Barkley in there, and Matt Barkley looked awful.
Yeah, Barkley. I mean, there was a time when he was an intriguing prospect, and he is just not good.
No, I mean, some of the picks he threw were astounding. It was just like, they were so bad that I don't know. It was one thing to watch those kickers miss field goals in the Arizona-Seattle game, because those are high-pressure situations. And I guess, to be fair, it's probably pretty high pressure for Barkley to be, you know, coming off the bench out of nowhere to, you know, face a real NFL defense in an actual NFL game. But man, he just looks so lost out there that while I don't want to see him play over Cutler, like, that's kind of a slap in the face to Cutler, isn't it?
I don't know. I really don't think John Fox likes Cutler, but yeah.
But you don't think so, doctor.
is it that obvious? to go to Barkley over Cutler, especially if it happens again, I mean, you got to give some credence to Cutler's had the injured thumb, and maybe he really just wasn't physically ready to play. But if it happens again, if there's any point the rest of the season where Barkley comes in over a healthy Cutler, that's a disaster sign for Cutler's future.
Yep. Let's talk about your team, the Washington professional football team, specifically the running backs. Matt Jones may have fumbled himself out of a job this past week, so I'm all in on Chris Thompson, but I'm curious to hear your take on the Washington backfield going forward.
Yeah, the Matt Jones situation is not good. I mean, he hasn't been great most weeks, but now Jay Gruden came out and said he may lose touches after two more fumbles this week, and fumbles were an issue last year. They've been an issue this year. The toughest thing is knowing where to go from that, because Chris Thompson isn't going to become a bell cow. He's still really interesting in PPR, if Matt Jones loses more touches. But I don't know that he has any route to becoming very interesting in standard leagues. And so Rob Kelly is probably the play in deep leagues if you're really out on Matt Jones. But I think largely this is just a Chris Thompson in PPR and nobody else kind of backfield.
Yeah, I could see maybe going after Matt Jones now, because you're right. There really aren't a whole lot of other options to handle a lot of handoffs from Kirk Cousins. Rob Kelly may be that guy, but I don't necessarily buy that. I think that if Rob Kelly was that dude, he would have probably usurped Matt Jones by now anyway. So if they're talking about more Rob Kelly moving forward, I'm not 100% believing that. I think that Matt Jones still has a role in this offense, but it could just become more of a timeshare. What I'd really like to see them do is kind of go to that Chargers approach from last year and use Thompson in the Woodhead role of, you know, he's basically the feature back, but he's not in on like short yardage carries all the time. And, you know, if there's ever some standard running plays, we'll go to Matt Jones and Kelly. But for the most part, Thompson's going to be our high leverage guy. If they could start using him like that, I think that that would be great for, you know, Chris Thompson, of course, but also for their offense. Like, I think it fits what they do, especially while Jordan Reed is out, you know, just having another receiver on the field to help spread it around, because without Reed, they don't have all that many elite guys to catch the ball. Like, Deshaun Jackson is fine. Jamison Crowder is fine. Chris Thompson is fine. But it's one of those, you know, the sum is greater than all the parts situations when I look at that team without Jordan Reed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're right that it's still a high volume offense and they have enough talent to make it work fairly well. Chris Thompson, I think he remains an interesting PPR option just because he sees targets. But for whatever reason, they aren't using him in that role you're talking about. They're not using him to catch touchdowns. He's getting these short passes. He's not getting a lot of yardage most times. And so it would be really interesting to see that change. But it seems like when they're looking to that kind of short and intermediate range, even without Reed, they're looking at Crowder and Garcon. And Thompson is kind of a dump-off option more often than anything else.
Yeah, I think that that's what could make him successful, though, especially, again, just coming back to Reed being out. Like, if Crowder and Garcon are your kind of go-tos in the receiving game, I don't think either of those guys is necessarily elite enough to the point where defenses couldn't take them away if they wanted to. You know what I mean? And in that sort of scenario, that leaves Chris Thompson to do a lot of work. Now, I mean, ultimately what's going to happen is the defense is going to be a little more, you know, malleable, a little more, what's the right word? Amorphous. They're not necessarily going to take the same player away every play, but I don't know. I think it bodes well for all of them if they can all be on the field at the same time, just because it gives Cousin that option to spread it around if he can make his reads correctly and put the ball where he needs to. Now, that's a whole other discussion, but I don't know. And Reed will come back eventually too, so that'll probably render all this speculation pretty moot. But let's keep going. Drew Brees, he did it on the road against Kansas City. Tough place to play, but he put up very good numbers. This week he is at home, but he's going to face that same Seattle defense that held Carson Palmer and the Cardinals to a 6-point tie. So what are you doing with Drew Brees this week? Do you feel like he's still that elite option that you have to play, or are there some of the more middling, you know, lower tier QB ones that you would play over Brees this week?
I would still be playing him. I think you play Drew Brees at home and you don't worry about the matchup. I think you're getting too cute if you're benching Drew Brees, because he is still going to be throwing and they're still so good when they're at home. And so Seattle is worrisome. He may have a depressed scoreline, but I do think that he's going to be, I would have a hard time benching him no matter who I've got as another option.
Yep, I agree with you. I believe that one thing the Saints offense does really well is finds the open guy. It finds ways to attack defenses because they have so many quality threats. You know, we saw David Johnson do a lot of work against Seattle last night. We saw Michael Floyd getting open when, you know, maybe Larry Fitzgerald couldn't. It just depends on how up to the task those other players on the New Orleans offense are when it comes to facing the Seahawks. I won't have Breeze necessarily QB1, but he'll still be in my top 10, I'm pretty sure. I haven't done rankings yet, but I have a feeling that's where he'll be. Do you have anything else looking forward to Week 8 or maybe beyond that, Josh?
I'll just note that if you're streaming, this is a tough week. There aren't a lot of options at all, much less good options. So I'm really looking forward to Sal and Jim's podcast this week to see kind of where they go with it, because it looks to be a tough time to choose quarterbacks if you're in that pick them up off waivers or rotate some bad quarterbacks, just because several are on bye this week.
Yeah. Do you have any predictions as to who they might choose?
I think Fitzpatrick is probably on that list against Cleveland, as sad as it is to say.
Yep. Osweiler will be on there too, I'm sure. He gets Detroit. So you got to attack that defense when you can.
Right. And we're finishing this up. The Monday night game is middle of the second quarter. Osweiler is 5 of 13 for 22 yards.
Classic Brock.
It's up and down. You know not to play him in these tough matchups.
That's true. I mean, that was a pretty easy matchup to kind of sniff out as one to avoid. What is the score of the game right now?
7-6 Denver. CJ Anderson just had the first touchdown of the game.
Ooh, and isn't he on your SFB team?
He is. I'm approaching 200 points this week.
Woo! Get it, Josh.
It's not bad.
Very cool. All right. Well, we'll have more on the Scott Fishbowl, I think, maybe next week or the week after that. We do want to kind of check back in. It's getting to that point in the season where, you know, the intrigue is starting to pile up. You know, players or drafters are in the playoff hunt and all that good stuff. But keep an ear out for that. Let's wrap this up, though. Please rate and review the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Check out all the great work at 2QBs.com. Josh, do you have any, you know, highlights from recent articles or anything you're looking forward to this week besides Sal and Jim's podcast?
Definitely looking forward to that. I am back after a week off with moving targets, and I've already written it and it'll come out on Wednesday, but it really is enlightening for me to look at target share and see where the offense is looking. So Devontae Adams is one of those guys that's been highlighted many weeks, and I'm not ready to say you got to start him, but he at least is getting those targets and looks like someone that you should be owning. So that's kind of my weekly thing. It's fun to write, but your rankings are a crucial part of my Sunday morning. So please make sure you get those up.
I'll do my best. And Sunday mornings with those is always fun. It's like I get up way earlier than I should on a Sunday because, you know, on the West Coast here, the games start really early relative to the East Coast. And it's just a tinker fest for a good 2 hours where I'm moving guys up a couple spots or a ton of spots. You know, the one I really struggled with this past week was the Buffalo Bills running back situation, where the reports were that LeSean McCoy was fine and he'd see a full workload. And then you'd see conflicting reports from another source saying he wasn't fine, he'd be on a snap count. And God, it was so frustrating. Like I sent a tweet out that morning. It was like, I will now stick my hand in a blender because I don't know what the hell to do with these guys. And sure enough, they both were awful. You know, I had Gillislee inside my top 20 at the time the rankings locked. And boy, was that a bad call. But maybe we should have talked about that game for next week. I think that there's a better chance that Gillislee is the guy in week 8. But let's interrupt the outro here. Josh, do you have any thoughts on the Bills backfield next week?
I think you're right. I mean, McCoy playing when he probably shouldn't have and re-injuring potentially something. I think there's going to be a high likelihood he is benched this week just so he heals up.
Yeah, and we know that Reggie Bush isn't the answer there. So that's another a good spot to put some waiver fab at is on Gillislee for week 8. But back to the lecture at hand, Twitter. You can follow the site 2QBs on Twitter. It's at 2QBs, and you got to spell that out, TWOQBS. As with all other instances of when I say 2QBs in this outro, one of which is Josh's Twitter handle, Lake2QBs. Once again, you can find me at GregSauce. You can search us up on Facebook. We'd take a like there. That would be awesome. And for longer form questions, you can always email us at 2QBs@gmail.com. Whew! I hate getting through that. It feels like such a chore, but it feels so necessary. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we really appreciate all the kindness you guys show us, all the listeners, the ratings, the interactions on Twitter, and the emails. I mean, the emails are a lot of fun. That's where we get into some more lengthy discussions and can really open up more than just the 140 characters. So thank you all for listening through the outro to hear all those ways of talking with us.
Yep. And thank you for listening to us every week. We do appreciate your support. And hopefully we can keep on delivering good analysis for you guys. We hope you get something out of it. And with that said, let's sign it off, Josh. Anything else before we go?
No, it's good to be back. Thanks for holding down the fort last week. You guys did a great job.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you for being back. We missed you. And to all you listeners, we'll catch you next time. Adios.